I'm in awe of these kids because they are sacrificing degrees. They're, you know, they could be doxxed for life. They have arrest records for life. You know, especially these elite Ivies.
Like right.
They've spent a lot of money. Now they're willing to give up their entire degree to stand up for what they think is
it's,
right.
It's a lot of risk, but also, what did you think was going to happen? You know, for years, we told these kids there wasn't going to be a job waiting for them. We told them that they're addicted to social media, that they're going to end up homeless. Well, now, guess what you get? Encampments in front of Harvard.
I'm Mehdi Hassan.
And I'm Sammy Obaid.
And we're not kidding, a new podcast from Zatteo in which I get to talk to funny people about serious things. And funny things, I hope, Sammy. It's a pleasure to see you here.
Yeah, I hope so too. Very nice. To...
It would be defy the purpose of having people like you come along if we can't also talk about funny things.
Yeah, I like that. I'm curious why you chose comedy.
It's a great question. It's because people think I'm super serious. So this entire podcast is partly about talking about big issues like Palestine, yeah. But also partly about just me trying to persuade people that I'm not this angry person who just does tough interviews. Maybe yeah. That's how you thought
no,
of me.
Well,
first time we're meeting, I should point
yeah,
out.
Yeah, no,
first
for
time
sure.
we're meeting, right
first
here
time
on
meeting.
Set.
Yeah, yeah. Well, most of us, when we feel that way, we just do an open mic, but you actually created a whole show for it. So that's actually it. Very entrepreneurial.
I don't know what I would do if I ever did an open mic. I don't know. I've always thought about, part of me has always thought about, what would it be like to walk out and do stand-up?
I think you would just talk about your Piers Morgan interview.
I could talk about Piers Morgan's interview. I've just done one. it's came out last week. I've done a certain other one. We could spend the whole of our lives just talking about Piers Morgan interviews.
Yeah, I mean, I'm first of all, I'm curious, Zatteo, because I saw, you know, I saw you left. By the way, it's a privilege to be here on MSNBC. I didn't know, I don't know when this is airing. Yeah. But I followed your story and like, you know, like many of us who followed you, like we're all very like sad when you got let go, but also like we knew it was going to be a catalyst for you. So you start Zatteo. What does Zatteo mean?
Well, it's an ancient Arabic word. No, it's not. It's an ancient Greek word.
Okay.
That means to seek out, to search for, to inquire for the truth. And the truth is that we struggle to find a name for our company because all the good names are gone. And then we came across this ancient Greek word. And by the way, a lot of media companies these days, Sammy,
sure.
Go with the ancient Greek names.
There's
Axios,
really?
There's Semaphore. There's a kind of, you know, grand Western civilization moment.
Sure.
My daughter said, why didn't you go with an Arabic word? And we did look at Arabic words. We looked at lots of different words. And, you know, the Latin words, the Greek words, they're fun. They have resonance. And I genuinely think we live in an age of bullshit and misinformation.
Sure.
And the idea of saying, you know what, I'm setting up a media company where this is our goal.
Yeah.
This is our mission statement to go seek out the truth. Like, you know, some kind of Captain Kirk on the Starship. our mission is to go seek where others have not gone. In a media space, that's what we're trying to do. And that's what we're trying to do since we launched.
So I'll probably name my company Pi because that's a Greek word.
That would be smart.
But I have to do an Arabic shout out too. So I'll do Zaatar Pi.
Zatarpai.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the name of the new Simon. Yeah, I like it. Yeah. We're brainstorming and getting stuff out of the way.
Yes.
So when Bassem Youssef and I on the first show were talking about how we could have named this podcast, we should have been doctors.
Yeah.
And he actually is a doctor.
Yes.
And my mother's a doctor, but I eternally disappointed her by not becoming a doctor. you didn't do the doctor route, but you did go down another proud route for brown parents, which is go make money in finance.
Right, absolutely.
You almost did.
Almost did. I have 2 degrees, actually.
Oh, wow.
Math and business, both from UC Berkeley. In fact, actually, my whole family is doctors.
Okay.
Like literally, well, I say this in my act, but everyone in my family is a doctor except me, my mom, my dad, my sister.
Okay.
We're like the rebels against medicine. We do, you know, we have alternative healing and yoga and the other family has the money, but
you could have had the money.
I could have had the money. Both my grandfathers were doctors. They were both surgeons. So they always wanted me to be a doctor. But you know, when I was 10 years old, I politely told them no. And
why? Yeah. Why at 10 years old do you think, I'm not going to do this traditional stuff, I'm going to do something different?
I just knew that cutting people open was not for me.
But you hadn't worked out in comedy yet?
No, no. Yeah, and then after trying comedy a few years, I was like, maybe I should have cut people open.
Yeah. When did you start comedy? Let's just do some basic biography. Sammy Obaid.
Yeah.
When do you become a comedian?
So I've been doing it for 17 years now. So 2007 was when I started in the Bush era.
That must have been fun.
It was
no,
a golden
no
era.
No content for Muslims then.
We had a lot to talk about back then because, you know, you remember the Axis of Evil?
Yes.
Those guys, they were like a huge influence for me because they really laid the groundwork for, you know, Arab American comedians. And so starting at that point, I was like, oh, I can actually put this into my act.
But you've become very political. one of the things that you've had to do. Your family is from Palestine originally.
My family's Lebanese Palestinian, and okay, I also have
that.
A
Bring
little
that
bit
down
of
for us.
So actually, my mom, she grew up in the States, and her mom is Italian and white, which makes her white. and in fact, my mom's side, like if you go way back, they have family that traces like to the, you know, I think the American colonies, like way back in the day. But my mom's also Lebanese, and my dad is Lebanese Palestinian. So I took my DNA test. I couldn't afford a 23andMe, so I got a 22andYou.
Okay.
And it just gives you a number to your parents, and I called them. And I took the test. My blood is 75% Levant.
Okay.
75% Levantine. And
is
so,
that what you expected? I don't know what the right number is supposed to be. I'm not a genetic. I know as much about genetics as I know about math.
It lined up. I mean, it lined up with my heritage. But yes, my grandma, my teta, she was in Palestine till 48. She left and she went to Lebanon. And so my dad's family, they're on Lebanon. All my family left Palestine. We have some extended relatives, but like direct family left Palestine.
So you're from this Palestinian family.
Yeah.
A lot of them are doctors. Lebanese Palestinian family. A lot of them are doctors. You decide not to do medicine. You do finance and math.
Yeah.
But then you don't use it. I do want to play a clip of you doing math on stage.
I was a math teacher in the inner city of Oakland, California for 6 years. Thank you, one person, for supporting my dreams. I had gang members in my class. When I taught, I had to come up with street-type analogies to make my lesson plans relatable. So for instance, we were studying the different kinds of numbers. I was like, all right, here's how you learn the different kinds of numbers. Imagine you're at a party, all the numbers are there, right? This crazy number comes in, just starts flipping over tables. You're like, what's your problem? He's like, I'm irrational. It's gonna get much worse, okay? Now you're irrational numbers. You're like, chill, man, we're both some real ass numbers, I mean. Both part of the same set. My number. Put it right there. My number, right? All the squares start rooting for you. Root, 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 root. You see this girl just floating by. He's like, damn, I want to get her digits. Nah, man, you can't. She's imaginary.
Yeah, does it add up?
Does it add up? I mean, when you sat down to think about that, where does that come from?
Well, math was actually one of the subjects that it took me a very long time to grow the courage to talk about. On stage, people are always like, oh, you're so brave for talking about, you know, what's happening in Palestine. I'm like, trust me, I talk about math. That's a lot harder. But, you know, after some time, I realized, hey, I can do some math stuff on stage. And people started to respond to it in a comedy setting. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go full on in. And I started to attract these people who like math. And then I did higher level math jokes.
Oh, wow. The jokes get higher level.
Oh, they get much higher level. Yeah, depending on who's in the
crowd. So I wouldn't follow any of that because math was always one of my weakest subjects. By the way, even saying math makes me feel weird because I'm from England, so it's maths.
Right.
Of course.
Now
I moved to the US.
You've pluralized it for some reason, even though there's only one math, but for you guys, it's...
But I guess mathematics.
Of course. No, of course.
Let's not have that debate.
I get it. No, we don't have to get into it.
There's some intense debates to be had. Whether math is plural or single is not the one we're going to have.
So what did you study then? Some language?
I studied politics, philosophy, and economics at university.
Oh, so what are you doing with it now?
I'm trying to ask. Yeah, it's a good question. Economics, I'm trying to run a business.
Yeah.
Philosophy, was never so good at it. Politics, I use quite a lot, I think it's fair to say. My life is politics.
I've seen some of your stuff.
What was the reaction from the family when you start doing comedy full time?
So my family's kind of an atypical Arab family. They were actually very supportive.
Okay.
You know, mom having grown up in the States, dad, he came here during college. They were both very hippie-ish people. They're very progressive.
Do they come to your shows?
They do. Yeah. They came to my first shows. They came to the first few and then they're like, we're good for now. And then, you know, they come every now and then, but my family's always been very supportive of the arts, but also I was a good student from day one. Like I always got straight A's. So like, they never kind of questioned that I would, you know.
Does that make it worse? You could have been so much more.
Yeah, you know, you would think, but I try to say this without sounding, someone to say cocky, but basically like when I was 10 years old, I realized that I was smarter than the rest of my family and they kind of realized it too. And they kind of let me do whatever I want.
A lot of things happen to you at 10 years old. Major milestone for Samia Bay. Turns 10.
I had it all figured out.
You had
10.
It all figured out. Although I have a daughter similar age who seems to have figured it all out. So maybe that's the case. So you go to comedy and I was reading about how you did 1,001 nights straight stand-up comedy. Like 1,001 nights.
Yes.
Like the book. Like
Correct, correct.
That was a deliberate thing? Like, I'm Arab, I'll do 1,000 on one night?
Yeah, well, it didn't start out as that. It started out where I said, I'm going to do stand-up as many nights in a row as I can to get good. And then I got to 100, and I was like, I'll do 200. And then I got to 200, I was like, I'm just going to do 365. I'm going to set a world record. And then I tried to submit it to the Guinness Book of World Records, and they're like, if you want it to be world record, we have to send out one of our appraisers. You got to pay us £200,000.
What?
And you got to provide the appraiser a place to live for yeah. And he's got to watch you every day. You got to start over. So I was like, no, thank you. It's going to be an informal record. So I hit day 365. I thought that was my world record. And somebody messaged me on Facebook and said, hey, there was a comedian who once did 2 years in a row. And I was like, come on. And I looked it up. It was a real thing. So I said, well, I can either stop now or I can go further. So I was like, what's a nice round number that's more than 2 years? And then I realized 1,000 days was like, it sounded really cool. 1,000 days of comedy. But I was like, if I'm going to do 1,000, why not do 1,001 Arabian Nights? So that's what I did.
And did you do 1,001?
I actually did 1,002, but nobody knows about that last one.
Okay. Yeah. Was that just you in a room on your own?
No, actually, it's funny. So I had this big grand celebration show on 1,001. Just, you know, the vibe was great. And then on 1,002, the Palestinian community of San Francisco wanted to give me like an award ceremony. And it was really, really nice, but it was a lot of people who didn't know I was going to be there. It was a lot of like families and stuff. It was 3 p.m., and so I finished this whole, you know, 1,001
nights and an afternoon.
And an afternoon. Okay. Yeah, exactly. But it was nice. It was nice to get that award. They gave me a plaque. It was really special. Yeah.
How much does your Arab, Lebanese, Palestinian, Levant heritage influence what you say and do now? We are in this crazy year where Gaza, for all the wrong reasons, has dominated the headlines for months now.
Yeah.
What do you do when you're prepping for stand-up now? Do you feel an obligation, a burden, a responsibility to address this?
Yeah, so I'd been talking about it for many years. I probably started talking about it like, you know, 15 years ago in my stand-up. And so over time, people started to know that I was talking about it. And so when this happened, you know, people were like, hey, what's your take on this? You know, in October 7th, like, what's your take on this? And like, you know, October was a very complicated month because it was like, it was a lot to take in after having, you know, followed this issue for many, many years and just to be like dropped in the worst scenario yet. It took me a while to really like think about like, what is my material going to be on this subject? Everybody was on edge. And so it took some time, but after, you know, a month, I do what I do. I got in the groove and I started to write material that I felt was appropriate and express my point of view and for the right cause. And so, yeah, that's what I did.
If you don't mind me asking, how much of that comes, not just from a kind of strategic comedy perspective, how do I use this news story to get a laugh?
Yeah.
How much of it is driven from a personal position of pain, grief, anger, outrage?
A lot of it, a lot of it. I mean, pain generally makes for the best comedy. It really, you know, generally is a good driver for what your material is. Also, when you keep things personal, it makes it more about you and people seem to like relate to that a bit more. So I definitely use that, my personal point of view and my personal pain into the comedy. People could see it. People watch my videos. They'd be like, are you okay? I'd be like, no, I'm not okay. Nobody should be okay right now. I try to express how I'm feeling. Although, you know, people do tell me I'm very like cold and calculated. That's like, I'm a math guy. So if I don't read as emotional to you sometimes, like I get it, but yeah, no, it definitely comes from my pain.
And you talked about personal. I mean, some of the clips I saw of yours before October 7th.
Yeah.
Let's play the one of you talking about Bethlehem with a young family member.
Yeah.
My dad was born a few hours out of Jerusalem. My mom was born in Utah. So both places where Jesus got resurrected. Now, my great-grandma was born in Bethlehem. And I tell people this. They're like, oh, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? I'm like, yeah, that's the one. She was Amish. She grew up in the Holy Land next to Scranton. She knew the three wise men from Dunder Mifflin. Come on! The birthplace of our Savior, Bethlehem, PA. No, everybody knows Bethlehem, birthplace of Jesus, the Savior of most people in this country. Yet if you ask most people in this country to point it out on a map, they're pointing to Pennsylvania. That's a problem. But it's not our fault. It's a very difficult geopolitical question. I had to look it up just for this joke. Yeah. My niece asked me over Christmas. My niece is 5 years old. She said, where's Jesus from? I was like, Bethlehem. Nailed it. Right? She was like, where's Bethlehem? I was like, oh, shit. Here we go. I got to give her the simplest answer you can, a five-year-old, but I also got to keep it real, you know? So I was like, okay. Well, technically, Bethlehem is in Palestine. But America, we don't recognize Palestine as a country, so technically it's in the Palestinian territories, specifically the West Bank, not the Gaza Strip. It was part of Israel, but they handed it over to the Palestinian National Authority in 1995 under the interim agreement of subpoint 5, section 2 of the UN resolution at the Oslo Accords. Thanks, Bill Clinton. This was pre-Monica, never mind. Of course, before that, it was British Mandate Palestine, and before that, the Ottoman Empire, and before that, a conquest during the Crusades, and before that, another conquest, and before that, another conquest, before that, another conquest. Wild times back then. People were crazy. Before that, the Roman Empire, because it was the law. Before that, Judea. Shout out to my Zionists. Before that, the Canaanites. Yes, we Canaanites is what they did not say. I made that up. Before that, random tribes from Africa. Black Lives Matter. And before that, it was the dinosaurs, if you believe in those. Did they teach you those? And of course, before all of that, it was just lots and lots and lots of rocks, which, as we know, belonged to the Palestinians. Now, one could argue that it still is in Israel, technically, because Israel technically occupies the West Bank. But, of course, Israel would say that's not the case, because that's illegal under international law, under many, many counts. Don't tell the UN. JK, they already know. Oh, my God, it's a mess. Everybody knows. Literally everybody knows, except most of the people in the country that could actually vote to stop it. God bless Pennsylvania. Merry Christmas. And that was the answer that I gave her in about 90 seconds flat, if you ever wanted to know where Bethlehem is. And I think she liked it. Because she immediately responded with, is Santa Claus real? I said, 100% Santa Claus is real. We definitely recognize Santa Claus. She's like, what are you getting me for Christmas? I said, I gave you the gift of Palestine. What more do you want? Like, people usually pay to see my shows. I gave it to you free of charge. She was like, free Palestine? I was like, exactly.
That was all true, by the way.
That was all true, though. The entire story.
And the history of Bethlehem, yeah.
The history of Bethlehem. I mean, that's powerful. So that's pre-October 7th, that clip we played.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Post-October 7th, how does your material change?
You know, on the October 7th attack, it was not an easy day to just be like, hey, guys, here's my free Palestine bits. You know what I mean? Like, any Palestinian was like, on October 7th, was like, everybody was just like taken aback. Like, the zeitgeist of most people on October 7th was what the fuck, you know? And it wasn't an easy day to just be like, here's my Palestinian bit. You know, I had to wait and kind of gain perspective over the next few days, actually gather what was going on, because there was so much misinformation in the beginning. And it's, you know, people who've been following the situation know for years is that you're going to be, the media is going to be spreading things that aren't true, like 40 beheaded babies. Like, we had to sift through that kind of stuff in the first few weeks. And once the clarity started to arise, we started to find out what was true and what wasn't true. Then I had more perspective on what my angle was. I mean, not to mention like how the siege, the genocide in Gaza just continued in a rampage, you know, from October 7th onward.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned a specific one that went viral was the 40 beheaded babies.
Yeah,
and it was used to justify a lot of atrocities.
Yeah.
In my world, you know, we're trying to fact check and debunk, and we made a video for Zateo where we talked about that. And, you know, I used Twitter and different platforms to push back against kind of misinformation. And sometimes I do wonder, is this stuff getting through? Is what we're saying and doing working? Like, there's so much out there. The kind of being overwhelmed by bullshit, to use a phrase.
Right.
How do we push back against that? Can you do it through comedy? Can I do it through news?
Absolutely. As long as whatever goes viral gets out there, right? And comedy actually is a great vehicle for stuff going viral. So, like, you know, for instance, the 40 beheaded babies. Let's say there was something, you know, because people are still using that soundbite. They're being like, oh, but, you know, they beheaded babies. And it's like, that was debunked.
Speaker Mike Johnson said on CNN just a couple of weeks ago, they burned babies in the oven, which has been heavily debunked. But he's still saying debunked.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
Senior American politician.
It's crazy. But, you know, say, you know, the actual truth goes viral, or, you know, through a comedic bit. Loves
dark
humor.
Have you had pushback from people? I always kind of touch wood and say people don't come up to me and, like, tell me off in the street. But I wonder what it's like for you in front of a live audience.
Oh, yeah, I've gotten every kind of criticism. But that's the thing, like, comedy has allowed me to get the thick skin of, like, being able to take criticism. And I like listening to people. If you don't like me, sure, tell me. I want to hear why. It might make me better, you know? I might tune it out. I might not care, but, like...
But as you say, you're going up to the line and say, can I step over the line? Where's the line on October 7th?
Yeah, I
do want to play another clip. One of them is the one you talk about hostages and why...
Right.
You are mixed views on this because you don't like hosting people.
I don't like hosting. Yeah.
Let's play that clip.
I never thought I would live to see the day where it's controversial to want peace. I posted that I want a ceasefire. This guy commented, oh, you want a ceasefire? So then you're just for taking hostages? What? What a horrible thing to say. No, I am against taking hostages. I want the hostages to come home, the Israeli hostages to come home, and I want the thousands of Palestinians being held unjustly in Israeli prisons to come home. Nobody should be held hostage. I'm anti-hostage. I don't even like having people over to my house. I don't like people willingly coming over to my house. Invited. I'm anti-guest. I once had guests over for too long. It became a hostage crisis. I couldn't get them to leave. And I don't want to feed people and listen to their stories. I can't take hostages. I live with my mom. I'd have to clear up by my mom first. I don't want to be a host. You have to be a host to take hostages. It's very stressful. That's where the root of the word hostages comes from, because the host ages from the stress.
So the point of that is just don't come over to my house. Yeah.
Can I come over to your house, Dave?
We're
not there yet.
I'll check our schedule.
We're not there yet.
I'll check our schedule.
After a few more shows. Okay, let's talk about American exceptionalism. Right now, we have the Gaza conflict, the genocide in Gaza. We have an American government that's backing it. And now we have these historic protests on campuses across the country. Scenes straight out of 1968, out of Vietnam, out of civil rights movement, and similar scenes from the police crushing protesters, academics, smashing skulls. Were you surprised to see what's been happening on American campuses?
You know, it's interesting. I didn't think this was coming, but I should have. Everybody should have seen this coming. You know, when the regular protests fail, and when, like, the people can't actually make an effective change, the students are going to do it. They did it for Vietnam. You know, Columbia has a legacy, you know, over many decades of doing activism like this. So we should have seen it coming. But when it happened, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Of course, the kids are going to save us again.
Yeah. I mean, this is the point I've been trying to make, is 1960s students protest against segregation.
Yeah.
They're on the right side of history. They
Absolutely,
get beaten by the
yeah.
police. They protest against Vietnam. They're on the right side of history. Get beaten by the police. They
right.
protest against Iraq.
Right.
They're on the right side of history. They protest
totally.
Against apartheid.
Right.
South Africa.
Right.
right side of history. Why do we think that they might not be on the right side of history again? Shouldn't we learn from the past?
Yeah. It's interesting to me how people can't see these things in real time. It's like, especially we use this comparison to Iraq. Like, everybody looks back 20 years ago and be like, oh, that was a huge mistake.
Yeah.
What were we thinking? We were all there.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of us were saying, no, this is wrong. Yeah. And a lot of people like, no, we got to. And it's like,
The people who said, no, we got to, just dusted themselves off, got up, moved on with life, and all rehabilitated. One of them is in the White House today, President of the United States.
Absolutely.
Getting things wrong in America doesn't necessarily cost you if you're a person in power and you're on the right side of the kind of power equation. But these kids are, I'm in awe of these kids, because they are sacrificing degrees. They're, you know, they could be doxxed for life. They have arrest records for life, you know, especially these elite Ivies.
Like, right.
They've spent a lot of money. They've clearly worked hard to get to Columbia or Yale. Now they're willing to give up their entire degree to stand up for what they think is right.
It's a lot of risk, but also, what did you think was going to happen? You know, for years, we told these kids there wasn't going to be a job waiting for them. We told them that they're addicted to social media, that they're going to end up homeless. Well, now guess what you get? Encampments in front of Harvard.
It's so true.
Yeah.
The idea of, like, tents.
Yeah.
That's the way forward. What did you think? It's very true. You graduated from Berkeley, right?
Yeah.
And Berkeley, interestingly, at the time we're taping this, although given the nature of the news agenda, has been
so far,
relatively
quiet.
Relatively quiet compared to your Columbia, your Yale, your NYU.
Yeah. I would say don't sleep on that.
Not being Berkeley. But I just think it is fascinating that it didn't have to be the way it was in Columbia.
Right.
It didn't have to be the way it was last weekend in UCLA.
Right.
There are other ways of doing this. Like, shock horror, when you don't call in the police on your own student body, on your own faculty, things don't go crazy.
Right.
Shock.
Right. Yeah, I mean, what we have is a bunch of displays, like, you know, in Texas, Governor Greg Abbott, or, you know, the people insisting the police being called on the Columbia students. Like, we have actors here who are trying to specifically shut these kids down. Whereas most campuses, they're going on fully peacefully. They're letting the kids do their thing and make their statements. And, you know, I mean, I don't want violence or clashes, but like if they're going to keep calling the police and create more turmoil, the kids are just going to push back harder. These kids are not going to give up.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. This protest starts spreading once you crack down on one. Yeah. Why would students do that?
Yeah.
Like nothing in history has ever taught us that this would actually happen.
It's as if these kids have some kind of channel that connects them all that's about to get banned.
Well, on that note, just very quickly, on social media, how much has that helped you compared to where you were 2-3 years ago? Because I see you all over social media. Was that the case 2-3 years ago?
I would have had no career if it wasn't for social media, you know, because I was stand up for 17 years. I had a moment where I had a little bit of buzz in Hollywood where I had like some agent manager and stuff. And then they all dropped me and I was doing my own thing for years and years and barely getting people to show up to my shows. And then social media started to become a vehicle for stand up clips, started posting them. And then suddenly they started getting proliferated.
You just mentioned in passing that they dropped you.
Yeah.
I got asked, did they drop you because of what you were saying on stage?
See, I never will outright say like, oh, I think that I got dropped because I was talking about Palestine. However, if you do look at the timeline, in 2013, I had a lot of buzz. I had manager, agent, all that stuff. And then and I had made one joke about being Palestinian that got on Conan O'Brien, but it was a very like in passing joke. In 2015, so after 2014, remember it was Operation Protective Edge, that one. And, you know, people became very aware about the plight of the Palestinians. And then in 2015, you know, I will credit Wanda Sykes, who allowed me to get on NBC's Last Comic Standing and do my Palestinian material. And that joke hit really hard. It circulated. It was on, you know, mainstream NBC. And after that, I got a lot of fans who were supportive of that, and I got some pushback for some people. And then shortly after is when Hollywood just kind of dropped me.
Because you also done some Netflix stuff.
Yeah. I did Netflix later after that. So I will never say that anybody dropped me for talking about Palestine. It's just that if you do look at the timeline, as soon as I started becoming vocal about it, I stopped, like things stopped coming my way. But
you'll never say it was about Palestine.
But
the timeline looks like Palestine. I've got nothing to add to that. Just to be clear,
it's a possibility. I mean, but if anything, really, like being outside of the industry, it just said, you know what? At least this gives me the ability to continue speaking my truth, and so I did. And so
freedom tastes good at times like this.
Absolutely. That said, I have a good relationship with a lot of people in Hollywood. Nobody's ever really explicitly, you know, said, you know, you're not going
to
get this.
But right now, you don't have to worry about what you're going to say.
No, because I do it all myself. It's all myself.
You're a one-man machine with your business major and your math.
Yeah, just doing it.
Let's talk about how we talk about Palestine.
Sure,
It threads together some of the stuff we're talking about in terms of onstage comedy, the messaging, how you feel about it, and what college students are doing.
Right.
One of the big arguments right now is the pro-Palestine side is letting itself down by allowing itself to be overrun by kind of hardcore activists who are pushing unpopular slogans. Mm-hmm, and when I was on Piers Morgan recently, he was obsessed with the word intifada. You did a great bit, and I want to play this bit. You did a great bit on River to the Sea, which really upsets people.
The censorship on Israel-Palestine is pretty wild, man. Elon Musk came out on X and said anyone who uses the term from the river to the sea will be suspended on this platform. You can't say from the river to the sea. What if you're giving directions to someone on a boat? See a guy on a boat near the ocean at a little lake. Like, hey, buddy, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to go from the river to the sea. Whoa! Just in from the river to the sea, his boat will be free. That's all I was saying. No, but you're saying once it gets out on the ocean, it's going to sink the other boats. Like, this isn't Battleship. I'm just giving directions. I want the liberation of that particular boat. That is simply what I'm saying. You know who else uses from the river to the sea? A baby salmon. Aww. Yeah. All the baby salmon, they're hatched upstream, and they have to swim from the river to the sea. From the river to the sea. It is a tale of a liberation of the baby salmons.
Nobody talks about the salmons anymore.
No one talks about the salmon. See, if you just went straight with the salmon, that would just calm everyone down.
I think it would.
It would just, you know, set the tone.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting question. Where do you stand on the kind of, there's the Ronald Reagan line that if you're explaining, you're losing. If you're having to say, well, this is what intifada means, this is what river to the sea means, then you're losing. There's the other argument that says, if you're allowing kind of white liberals to tell a, you know, a anti-colonial movement, resistance movement, what right. language to use,
right.
that's not right either.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both those. I agree with both those perspectives, you know, to a degree. I mean, the first thing is like, do we have freedom of speech or do we not? Are we going to make up our minds here? Like, I understand, like, nobody wants to be called a racial slur. Like, you know, people, we don't want hate speech proliferating to the point where people are actually feeling harmed. But at the same time, like, from the river to the sea, if you look at like the actual context of it and the history of it, you'll see that only in very few circumstances was it actually used in the way that it's being accused of being used, just like a lot of other terms have been. And so it's not really fair. I mean, specifically like Intifada, for instance. Yes, there's been a history of violence associated with Intifada, but Intifada is just a word in Arabic.
Yeah.
You're just going to ban a word in Arabic. Because Intifada means uprising, but it also means to shake it off.
Yeah.
So it's basically a Taylor Swift song.
Okay. So there you go.
Yeah.
That's what you got. That's yeah. what you need to turn up to Colombia.
Yeah.
And you need to be, you have to have your little placards.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift, if you look at her albums in Arabic, you know, her song is it's Intifada.
Oh, she's going to be delighted when she hears this, I'm sure. It's funny though, because on a serious note, and I'm the serious guy here, Intifada, the meaning is fascinating. As I pointed out to Piers Morgan last week, the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising is described on the US Holocaust Memorial Museum's Arabic page as the Warsaw Ghetto Intifada.
There you go.
Like, so hold on, are we saying the Jews who fought the Nazis in Poland were terrorists?
Right. Are you going to you can't change that word.
You can't change the word. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's, but then, okay, so here's the big question.
Yeah.
Do you believe you're changing hearts and minds from the stage with your use of rhetoric, with your ability to laugh about words like river to the sea?
A critique that I get a lot, or a comment that I get a lot of is, yeah, I don't fully agree with your politics, but I think you're really funny. That at least gets people to listen to the whole thing. I've also got a lot of people who say like, oh, you know, I used to see things the other way. I started to watch your comedy. It made me research more. And now I see things completely differently. So it's kind of like an appetizer.
They're researching Palestine or the salmon?
They're researching Palestine or the salmon. They're researching both. Yeah, how to cook a salmon, yeah.
Yeah, no, I spend a lot of time thinking about that. I've just literally founded a media company. It's all about communication. It's all about building an audience.
Right.
And one of the questions in my darker hours I have to ask myself is, are we getting through here? Is anything we're saying counting? And when you see what's happening with the college protests and the double standards and the gaslighting about some of the language, you know, people who spent years saying free speech, free speech, free speech, because some student on campus, you know, wanted a mic, you know, talked about a microaggression. Like, oh, look at these snowflakes.
Right.
And now the students are being beaten by police and counter protesters
for free speech.
Where are the free speech warriors?
Yeah. That I think we need, I think everybody who calls for free speech on other issues, we need to call those people out. They need to be held accountable. And we need to ask the real question. If you believe in free speech, are you going to stand for it at all times?
No, because there's a Palestine exception to free speech in this country.
Yes, and that needs to change. It needs to change right now. It's either free speech or no free speech.
Do you think it is changing?
I think it is. I think it is. I'm all about changing the narrative. Like, trust me, as somebody who's, you know, faced a bit of adversity for the things that I've talked about, I've always tuned it out. I've always seen, like, the truth will always get through. You know, if the truth's on your side, you're going to be fine. And as long as you know... We live in America. Like, we're allowed free speech. We're allowed, like, all of these opportunities.
Well, are we, is the question.
Well, I know my rights.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I know my rights. And you can try to push back, but I will tell you that you're wrong, but, you know, legally. You know what I'm saying? So knowing that the truth is enough to shine through. And I use humor just as a way to, like, you know, shed even more light and make us laugh at it all.
Is there an experience you've had or story you can tell about where an audience member hasn't just said, okay, I disagree with your politics, but I find you funny. Mm-hmm. Someone who said, or just, I've got to go research on google.com.
But has actually
said, you know what? You've helped change my mind, or a family member's mind, or a friend's mind.
Yeah, I got a message a couple days ago from a fan who said, my dad, big Zionist, you know, did not, you know, believe in any, you know, Palestinian state or rights for Palestinians. I showed him a clip a while ago and he started to go down the rabbit hole. And since then, he's totally changed his mind in the last few months. And he actually bought tickets to your show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You're going to meet this person?
Yeah, I guess we'll see. We'll see. But
no pressure when you perform that.
But either way, it's like, listen, man, the transformation has to happen somewhere, you know? And so it's just nice. That wasn't the only, I've gotten other messages that are a lot like that. And I'm like, welcome. Just come listen, come laugh, come learn, you know?
Well, if you do want to come listen, laugh and learn, it's a great moment for me to plug your tour. Yeah. Sammy is currently on tour. It's going to be in San Jose, May 19th, San Francisco, May 21st, Las Vegas, May 27th. Other dates are on SammyKO.com. Check him out. He's all over the place. He's not doing 1,001 nights again, but he is doing a pretty intense tour. And we appreciate you taking time out in between stand-up shows
of course.
Come here.
Yeah, actually, I have a show tonight.
I hope you make it back. I flew out here to do the show. American domestic air travel means you're guaranteed to make it on time.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no issues at all. I've lived here for 9 years. I don't think I've ever done a domestic journey back and forth which didn't involve on some part of the leg some kind of delay.
Yeah,
not that
sure.
I'm trying to jinx
for
you
sure. Tonight. No, for sure.
But it is a nightmare. Sammy, we appreciate you taking time out for us. We appreciate all of you tuning in for this podcast. I'm Mehdi Hassan.
And I'm Sammy Obaid.
And we're not kidding. We're not kidding at all. We had a lot to say. Bassem Youssef will be back for the next show in a couple of weeks. Please do like the podcast, subscribe, all the usual stuff. It's a new show. We need your support. Go put comments, share it with your friends and family, and do subscribe to Zatteo at zatteo.com. We do need your support to help change the narrative. That's what
absolutely.
We're all about as well.
And that's what you're about too. And that's what I respect a lot about you, man.
Well, let's do it together. Yeah, you with a smile and me with my resting angry Muslim face.
Good cop, bad cop.
Sammy, thank you so much.
Of course, my pleasure.